Hi again, everybody. Welcome to Radio MVP Sports Podcast, episode 179 of the Sports Podcast. Take number 75 here with some technical difficulties, but we're going to just power through and hopefully it all sounds well on your end listening. I can't quite decipher what the interference is, which is unique. This is a really basic setup that worked so well for the last couple of years, if not longer. But we're having a little issues here today, so I apologize if this sounds a little echoey on your end listening, but bear with us. We're going to work through this as we get through. As I mentioned, this is episode 179. It is middle of March, actually the second half of March, which means we are past the opening rounds of the NCAAs, and we are literally days away from the baseball season, as baseball now begins in March in 2024.
Yeah, we're 3 days away. 10-10 on Thursday night in Oakland.
You know what? As much as there's great basketball going on, and there's a lot to talk about there, I think there's more to talk about the Cleveland Guardians and some of the decisions that have been made and where this team may head under new leadership in Stephen Vogt at manager. He's the youngest manager in, I don't know if he's the youngest in Cleveland's history, but he's the second youngest in Major League Baseball today.
Yeah, and early on, everything that you've read from what he said, from what he's done, I really liked. You know, two instances is, as soon as he was hired, Bieber and him met in Cleveland or Phoenix somewhere.
Right.
And he had already watched Bieber starts from last year and told him, you threw no changeups to right-handed batters last year. None. Bieber throws changeups to right-handed batters in the spring. Granted, spring training, you're facing some hitters who will make a lot.
You're working on pitches.
And he has looked really sharp. The velocity with the Trevor Bauer's drive line out in California, velocity's up 2.5-3 miles an hour. He met with Angel Martinez, a AAA prospect, and told him, open your stance a little bit and be a little more straight up and down. And he's added some power there. So he's an intriguing prospect that will probably see his debut come this year. I think he is comfortable in his own skin, Tim. And he is not just... Right, a lot of people are saying, oh, he's going to do it Antonetti and turn off Tomlin. That's far from the case.
It's hard to judge a guy who hasn't managed a game yet. What you were just talking about is same players, different eyes.
Yeah.
You know, a different set of eyes, different coaching staff, a new energy brought to the team. And it'll be fun to watch and to see how it develops. I'm not saying, he won't be good because we just don't know.
Oh, yeah, we're going to find out in a couple years from now.
We're going to have a good idea of what we see and what we like and dislike probably by All-Star break. And then by the end of the year, you'll have, a grade on that guy. But again, as you just said, it'd probably take a couple years to get a real – honest opinion of him because he needs to grow into the position. Obviously, being a lifer that he is in baseball, as a catcher, as a backup, as a utility guy, he's seen a lot of baseball. And there seems to be a trend in the last 25 years in baseball to find former catchers and make them managers. And not saying that every former catcher becomes a great manager, because that's not the case. But they do pay attention to details. And they do have unique philosophies. And one thing you noticed right away is he's put his personality into the training camp and he wants to have a good time. He wants the guys to be loose and relaxed. Nothing different. I mean, every person's different. He's not Terry Francona. I'm not going to judge him to Terry Francona level. That'd be ridiculous. He's not any previous manager that the Guardians have had. And he is who he is, and we'll find out how he can manage a game. And that will be the fun part, to watch him talk about the lineups every day, mm-hmm. to see how he handles the pitching staff.
The bullpen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, but, I mean, he has some good people around him, too. So it's not all 100% Stephen Vogt making these decisions. No. He'll have the final say, obviously, as manager, but there's a lot of good people around him, and I think that, you know, is something going forward. And one thing I think we've noticed in the last 25 years of Cleveland baseball, the Guardians / Indians mm-hmm. genre, is that it is a collaborative
effort, yeah,
from the front office to the coaching staff to the manager to the players. It's a collective you know, thing that goes on here, because you do have a GM who is involved, mm-hmm. and you have a president who's involved. They don't necessarily get involved in the day-to-day mm-hmm. activity of what's going on in the game, as they are not afraid to review what happened and make suggestions about maybe how to handle such situations or players or what. And that's, you know, all part of the analytics of this organization.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think definitely you can see Stephen Vogt is putting his own stamp on this roster. I think he is using a collaborative effort from Antonetti, Chernoff, Carl Wells. He's leaned on big
right.
time.
Oh, yeah, he should.
Sandy Alomar's even, you know, been to the ringer, too. It's going to be really interesting to me how he approaches his bullpen.
Yeah.
A, because that's every new manager. And B, because we have a lot of new faces, a lot of young guys, because we have three guys out for the future right now.
Right.
And Henschus and Karinchak and Stefan.
Yeah. I mean, let's be honest. It's a different bullpen this year.
Yeah. It's going to be really interesting to see. And I don't think we're going to have an idea, and I think it might be by committee, how he bridges the 6th, 7th, 8th to get to Class A. You know, yeah, granted, you would love to go 6th inning, your starting pitcher, and go 7, 8, 9, but we all know that's not going to work like that on a nightly basis. The thing that I like is they traded away Cal Quantrill this offseason, and there's a lot of talk of where is the depth going to come from? Because there are guys down there, but they're very young. And I think now you see you have a solid four guys, and that's Bieber, McKenzie, Bybee, and when Gavin Williams comes back, Gavin Williams. Logan Allen has shown a lot of potential. He's still young. I love the Carlos Carrasco addition. You and I have talked about this the last couple of years. This team has missed a veteran arm. They missed that veteran arm that guys can lean on and pick their brain off of.
You know.
And then you got guys like Ben Lively, Tanner Beattie, who's pitched really well in camp so far. Davion Curley came on nice last year. So you have now 8, 9 guys that you can maybe count on, because you know you're not going to go the whole season with your starting five. There are going to be injuries. There are going to be ups and downs.
I mean, if you do go the whole season,
then you're extremely blessed.
Well, not even that. You had a great season.
Yeah. Yeah, you're going to be
you're going to be right playing there.
In October.
I'd be shocked if you're not. And, I mean, that'd be it doesn't happen very often, as you just mentioned, and I agree with you. I mean, you're blessed. That's a great way to put it, like you just mm-hmm. said. But, let's hope for that. But, you know, you brought up a lot there.
Mm-hmm.
I think the story of the camp is Carlos Carrasco.
Absolutely 100%. Absolutely 110%.
I mean, what he, you know, obviously it's training camp, and he had a roster to win,
mm-hmm.
a spot to win, and he did. Now it's to see if he can take what he did this spring into the season and survive
yeah.
April and May, and then build on it. And we'll find out. I mean, I like his attitude. He basically already came out and said he didn't care if he was a starter or a reliever,
yeah,
or if he gets moved to the bullpen during the season. He just wanted to be in Cleveland, which is a phenomenal answer, by the way,
Cleveland
to that question.
All Cleveland sports teams need that kind of mindset from players.
All sports teams. I mean, you do. But that's a veteran guy who's been through that. Yeah.
When you're playing for L.A., or Atlanta, or a bigger market.
I'm not sure it's easier in a bigger market or a smaller market as much as it's a mindset, I think, of a veteran who's looking to extend his career.
Yes.
When you're a 23 or 24-year-old who's somewhat in the process of establishing himself,
mm-hmm,
maybe a third-year player, you're probably going to be a little bit more selfish thinking, I want my, you know, every fifth day in the rotation, I want the ball. I want to be able to call my game, you know, and play the way I think I can. And I'm not saying that's wrong neither, by the way. That's just showing confidence. But I think there's just a difference between a 15-year-old vet.
Oh, absolutely.
And a, you know, a third-year player who's trying to establish himself. As a potential all-star and, you know, becoming maybe a number one or a number two in a rotation type scenario. But the young arms that they have, they're going to develop. They have some injuries, as you mentioned, and they got a bullpen that's going to be untested.
And it's a young bullpen.
It's untested.
Yeah, it's a very raw bullpen, sans Class A and Barlow.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, you look at, you know, you got Barlow, you got Sandlin, you got Morgan. I mean, you got some players that you know of.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you got Emmanuel Class A. It's, you know, Tim Herron. You know, Hunter Gaddis is probably the second story of the
Gaddis has pitched his butt off.
Yeah. Well, again, it's easy. Here's the hardest part to get apart. It's easy to be a superstar in training camp.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And then translate that into April and May.
Mm-hmm.
I should say easy, but many players can establish their value to a team,
yes,
and make a roster out of spring training. But when it comes down to when the games are on the line, mm-hmm, and meaning something, and pitching, you know, 3 days a week,
mm-hmm,
out of the bullpen, like Hunter Gaddis will do,
mm-hmm,
and that. And I'm not saying they have not prepared themselves for it, but it's the next level.
Different.
It's the next level. You're not facing the AAA ball player.
No, the ramp up and intensity of the games mean something.
And, and the value of the players you're facing.
Eli Morgan struggled with that a couple years ago, and he transitioned from a starter reliever. It's how you transition your body and your arm and your mental mindset.
It's a long season. Yeah, it's a long season.
Every other day, every third day or fourth day, to you may not pitch for 6-7 games. You know, you never know. But the work he put in starting last year to now is a credit to him. Really nice job by Gaddis and Carl Willis and Stephen Vogt to get him to where he's now. He's deserved that roster spot. He's earned that right to be in the bullpen.
Yeah.
And like Tom Hamilton said, because of injuries and inexperience, he might find himself in 7th, 8th innings early on.
You're going to find a lot of players in unfamiliar situations this year. And that's because, A, they don't have the experience, and you cannot set up your bullpen traditionally like you normally would. Okay, so you don't have the veterans. You have a closer, but you don't have the veterans.
So you don't have
a guy who you – all these guys are going to pitch you in the 5th, in the 9th inning. Simple as that.
I like the way the bullpen – now it's March 25th. We'll play game one on Thursday night. But I like the way the bullpen is constructed now, because with our roster makeup offensively, we've known it for years now, and it's going to be who we are. We're going to have to win low-scoring, close games. That's how we play. That's how this roster is constructed. I like the bullpen having a variety of arms that can give you an inning, a third, two innings, maybe three if you really need it.
Yeah.
There are guys with durability there that you can count on to say, hey, I need you to get me two tonight instead of just a 3 hours.
Yeah, well, again, it'll be interesting to watch Vogt manage his bullpen differently. I mean, obviously, anytime, you know, you're missing four players that basically were a big part of your bullpen the last 2 years. You know, Trevor Stephens, or Stephen, excuse me, and Karinchak, and then Henches. Curry and Lively, who they just traded
Henches
for.
Henches, too, is out.
Henches, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of players
and Gavin
missing.
Williams in the starting rotations on the IL.
That's what I'm saying. We're going to see, as Tom Hamilton mentioned, you're just going to see players in different scenarios, but you're going to see them throughout the spring, at least April.
Well, I think what he said really stood out last week. I don't know if you caught it or not.
Yeah.
He said, everybody wants to get up in arms about the opening day roster, and that's great. That's exciting.
Oh, yeah,
you know,
it's a 24.
But the 26 you have on March 28th, you might have a completely different roster come May 1st.
It happens every year.
You're going to have a complete well, – when guys get healthy.
I'll even
guys,
say this. Usually, just look at Cleveland's roster. I mean, if we had it in front of us, we don't. But if you had the roster from last year's opening day and the roster that you had on July 1st, it's a totally different roster.
Absolutely.
And that's normal.
Yeah.
That's how baseball's played today. 50 years ago, you didn't have those changes. Mm-hmm. Today, you do. Obviously, you got players coming off the injury reserve here in a little bit. That, you know, injuries list, and that will change, you know, what players go up and down, and it'll depend on performance and available, you know, moves that they can make with that player, you know, options. But it is a combination of different things. And, you know, they have some big decisions to make this year, and it'll be interesting to see. Like I said, this is a very young bullpen and very untested bullpen. You got Class A trying to make a comeback, in a sense.
Absolutely.
You know, be a more consistent player. It's a brand new year. Let's see what he can do.
Yeah,
I'm not
going to
judge
every
him.
Year.
Yeah,
bullpens are so fickle that, you know, you almost got to have amnesia from 1 year to the other. You got to completely forget about
you what? Really do. You know, the best players in the world don't remember what they did yesterday.
Nope.
And I hate saying it like that. It's just they know what happened in the game that just ended. It won't matter tomorrow. Mm. Other than if you're pitching, you know, your second or third game in a row type scenario for the bullpen player. That's totally different. However, this is a young bullpen, and it's a young pitching staff.
We're going to be battle tested, really. You got the Mariners a nice offense. The Twins are a nice offense.
Yeah, it's a young pitching staff.
So,
other than Carlos Carrasco and Bieber, it's a young pitching staff.
Yeah.
I mean, you get right down to it. I mean, there's no one of significant years of service on this staff. And that's going to be a challenge going forward. I mean, they are young. And that was one of the establishment that the front office made this year in the offseason is we have a lot of players we have to see to find out what they can do. And what we had over the last 11 years is the best manager in baseball to handle young and mature players and get maximum performance out of them and put them in situations to succeed and to surprise teams like we did 2 years ago and win a division and make the playoffs and all that. Last year, of course, injuries and health and a few other things, you know, took a toll on Terry Francona, as simple as that, and it was just time for him to move on. And you know, we'll see what Stephen Vogt can do. I'm excited. I'm not surprised. I'm actually, you know, I want to give him congratulations on making tough decisions this year.
Yeah, he made tough decisions this year that, quite frankly, I don't think a lot of people expected this early on that he'd make.
Well, the organization had to make decisions that didn't want to make.
Yeah.
They invested in a player in Miles Straw who's underperformed. and they're stuck with him for the next 4 years. There's no way around it. They have him through 2027. Basically locked up, even through 2028.
If they pick up an option. Yeah.
So, you know, they had to make that decision. They made the right decision in removing him off the 40-man roster, which frees up a spot. He's going to make a lot of money playing AAA baseball.
Yes, he is.
And he may be doing that for the next 4 years. We don't know. Sooner or later, they'll cut bait if that's the case and just pay him off. There's nothing you can do about it. But I think, you know, it'll be interesting to see how he performs at AAA. And you're going to have to make sure he's 100% ready for Major League Baseball when you bring him back and put him on a 40-man roster. Because when you do that again, he's not getting off that 40-man roster.
Nope.
So if he spends the entire season at AAA, I would not be shocked. Just for that reason alone.
If you it's can't in Cleveland,
I
think, we'll spend all year in
Columbus. Well, I don't think anyone's going to trade him.
I think the only way, a team gets desperate enough to trade for him is if they're ravaged by injuries or if it's a National League team and they feel they can improve their defense. They already have a good offense. They don't really need him to produce.
I think the albatross is his contract. I don't think anybody's going to ever trade for him for at least 2 years.
Yeah, I think he'll be in Columbus for 2 years, and to them, it would not shock me if he never plays again for this team.
I won't be surprised there neither, but
left field are already locked up.
Yeah.
Right field, if the lottery continues to progress, is going to be locked up.
Yeah. That's potential.
So, center field, it could be Freeman, it could be Laureano.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. And an interesting thing I read about earlier was Laureano. There's thought that he's tradable come trade time.
I absolutely think he is. And he's a veteran piece off the bench. Right. And you can platoon.
Again, when you make a trade like that, if you do, that frees up a spot to potentially bring him back.
Yep.
Not saying you will. You don't know who's going to impress, you know, throughout the organization who may, they say, for example, you just meant Lotter and say, you know, let's bring him up. Let's give him an opportunity to play every day and see what he can do for this team. Maybe add some punch to the lineup. And these are the things, I mean, obviously you can't have an outfield that hits 12 home runs.
No.
You just can't do it. I think they hit 7 last year total. Or 8, you know.
Yeah, some, whatever.
It was pathetic. So, you know, Laureano could play all three positions. He's definitely a backup center fielder if you need him. Freeman as a center fielder, I have not seen him.
I haven't either. We're going to find out.
Yeah, we're going to find out if this is a good
move. We're going to find out Thursday night. He'll probably be in there Thursday night against the lefty.
Well, he's going to be there most nights, from my understanding. I mean, I'm sure they will you know, alternate them at times. But my understanding from what I've read is he's going to have first shot.
Yeah.
They're going to give him the best opportunity
to
play.
Here's what I don't understand.
Yeah.
Is, now, I understand part of it. Because we need right-handed bats. We don't have a ton of them.
Right.
If you're going to put Freeman in center primarily, and Roku is going to be your everyday shortstop, I don't understand carrying both Arias and David Fry.
Well, David Fry is a catcher.
Yes. But so, is he going to play catcher when you got Austin Hedges?
Yes. Because what will happen is Austin will catch X amount of games or X amount of innings and then be relieved in the game because of his bat. And David Fry would be the guy who could end step
in. I like
David
Fry. I like him on
the roster. But that's my opinion. I mean, I don't know this for a fact.
I don't think
But I could see, for example, Hedges being your starting catcher for the first 7 innings. When it's his third at-bat and he's 0-for-2, struck out twice, and you're facing a certain player, you'd rather have a Fry at the plate.
Yep.
He's either going to pinch hit and they're going to bring back in Naylor, mm-hmm. or they're going to let him catch.
Yeah.
And it makes sense if you let him catch to give Naylor the full day off.
Yes.
Well, and I think doubleheaders, stuff like that, Fry will catch.
I think Fry and that's just my first, and the corner outfield spots will help him a lot. I like him on the roster. I guess I'm just confused as to areas.
But well, we have a lot of dual players, meaning we have a lot of players. This is an organization that values shortstops.
Oh, yeah, they love them.
And because of the quote-unquote athletic ability and move them to different positions. And it has been a philosophy that's been part of the organization for many years. A perfect example of that is Ramirez was a shortstop coming up through the ranks. He made his debut as a shortstop in the major leagues. He went to the outfield and also played third base to get at-bats and then became a third baseman. And, you know, the rest is history. To use him as an example, this has been a philosophy of the organization is to get, because the thought process, not always the case, but your best athlete is your shortstop. The problem I have with the players they've drafted and the players they have acquired is very similar to what they did to the outfield. They're all similar players in abilities.
There's no variety.
There's no variety. Right. Like when you have a power hitting shortstop, that brings a whole new dynamic to the position.
Yep.
But I don't see any of those players as power hitters. The only one who has potential to be a decent power hitter, and I don't mean a great power hitter, I'm talking about 12 to 15 a year is Arias.
Yes.
I don't think he's got Frankie Lindor is going to hit 30.
No. Okay. No, he's never going to give you 20, 25 home runs, but he has the potential, and I think that's why they took him. But his team is devoid of power.
Right.
So they'll take the 210, 220 if he can get you 12 to 15 homers.
Well, and this is the problem when you lack power in your organization and you don't have – you're searching for that, for that thump in your lineup. And I just don't know if they're going to find it. Obviously, the Naylors are your best potential. I mean, obviously, Josh Naylor, we know what he can do. And then you got Bo. And Bo has potential to be a guy who can drive the ball.
15, 20 home run guy.
Yeah. He is definitely has the potential to be a guy who can, you know, hit the ball. So – yeah, but then you look at the rest of the organization.
I think Jimenez can give you 15 to 20.
And this is where I get arguments with people. I says we have too many Stephen Kwans. Now, when I say that,
I am not necessarily knocking
Stephen Kwan's ability.
I understand what
you mean. I'm saying the other players resemble similar numbers that he represents.
Exactly.
I'm not saying that they're as good as he is. Because he is a guy who potentially could hit 300 for a game season.
Yes.
He's a guy who potentially could steal 25-plus bases a season. He's a guy who potentially could hit 8 to 10 home runs. I'd say he will. But those are all within his offensive category. And defensively, you got a gold glove you know, right or left fielder right now. So, I mean, on that level, he's better than the others.
Yes.
But the others don't produce many numbers better than what he does.
No, you're going to have 250, 260.
Yeah, and that's the
problem. 2 to 5 home runs.
Yeah, Brennan to me is Stephen Kwan, just not as good.
He's Stephen Kwan, but slower.
Yeah.
I mean, not to be mean, but that's what he is.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, and this is the problem that the organization has. And this is the problem they've had at shortstop, is they got a lot of players that are similar.
Yep.
They're not. The same thing. There's no difference that you say, oh, there's the difference.
Yep.
Now, in Rocchio, I think you can say that defense is the difference.
Yes.
You can see that. And I think he's a better contact hitter than the others.
Yes, he
meaning
is.
He'll make contact with the ball better than Arias.
It'll be interesting to see how Rocchio performs his first full year in the big leagues.
Yeah. I mean, what we seen last year, I was impressed. I liked
it. Absolutely.
I think I'm not shocked that he won the job at shorts. I really not.
No, I'm not either.
I thought it'd take an exceptional effort from Arias to secure that job. And, you know, Rocchio outperformed. Brian Rocchio did what he needed to do.
Yep.
So give him credit where credit's due. As for Marzano down at AAA,
I understand that.
Yeah.
I understand that.
This is typical Guardian baseball where they like to start their young players at AAA. And then bring them up in May and June and give them an opportunity.
Exactly.
Get their seasoning in, as the saying goes. And maybe there's an economic advantage still.
Exactly.
I do not know if there is or isn't.
I don't know anymore.
Yeah,
they used to meet up here at service time pretty well.
There was. There was a way to manipulate it, and they did it all the time. The only player in the last 20 years, really, to start the season as a rookie was Kwan.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
He made the roster in 2022.
Yeah, I mean, Frankie Lindor was kind of like that.
June.
But Frankie came up in June.
In June?
Yeah.
Jose came up.
He came up
May,
in middle. Yeah,
May,
he came
June,
up because of injuries and that. But he was down in AAA for a while.
Naquin came up end of 2016.
Yeah.
Zimmer, same thing.
Yeah. No, I mean, this is the way the organization runs.
Yeah.
I mean, this is just their decision-making. And right or wrong, that's the way they do things in Cleveland. I mean, I don't think it's terrible.
No, every other franchise does it. So it's not like...
I mean, like I said, Stephen Kwan's one of the unique players that broke into starting lineup as a rookie. And breaking camp. That doesn't happen too often. And Rocchio is the next. I mean, let's face it. He was up here because of injuries and trades last year.
Yeah, this is his first full season. This is his rookie season.
It really truly is his rookie season coming up. So we'll see how he performs. Andres Giménez is the wild card here. We need him back. What he was 2 years ago.
We need him to get healthy. I think last year, coming off the handmade bone surgery just really affected him. And, you know, let's be honest, teams made some adjustments to him, and he didn't make, you know, the sophomore slump, as they per se. We all know his glove.
Yeah.
That's going to be a constant. But if we can get him back to 75% even of what he was the first half of 2022, because the first half of 2022, he was phenomenal.
Yeah, let's just, I know what you're saying. I honestly think that he should be no less than a 275, 280 hitter. And I honestly do believe
20 home runs is doable.
Yes, yes.
I'm
not even concerned about the power numbers as much as if he gets on base, if he's batting at good average, the home runs will be there.
Yes, I think.
You know, I think he just needs good at-bats. If he has good quality at-bats, and he's batting a minimum of 275, 280, which I think he's very capable of as
a
minimum.
If you can even give me 260 and 20 home runs, I'll take it.
Right. Well, again, I don't know if you get the 20 home runs at 260. I'm being honest.
Okay.
I think he needs the quality at-bats, and when he has the quality at-bats, the home runs come. So he has to probably be 275 to 290, in my mind, to be that
type of
player.
Which is doable. When he's healthy, that's doable.
I mean, the year he had 2 years ago, he batted just about 300 for the entire season. And in September, he slumped.
Yeah, because he had the broken hamate bone. Yeah.
Or eggs, needless to say, you know, he slumped. And, you know, maybe last year was a combination of still getting healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Late in the season, he seemed to be much better than he was most of the year.
Yeah, his big thing is finding his strike zone and not expanding big time. He became a free swinger last year.
What he's best at, what he was really good at 2 years ago, was making contact with two strikes and not necessarily getting on top of the ball, meaning
just driving
through the ball.
Mm-hmm.
So if it went
left field, left center,
went off. If it went oppo, it was no big deal.
No,
when he turned on it, he could go down the lines and take a home run and all those type of things. There's no question about that. He has that type of a bat. But the key I think, is him having good at-bats, not striking out, not falling for the same pitch like he did last year. You threw him a curveball off the plate last year. He just could not resist it. He had a swing at it, and he just could not resist it. They weren't even strikes, and he was going after
them. No, they were in the air batter's box. The same thing with Ahmed was right on sliders in the air batter's box. He was swinging them out of the
way. Right, yeah. Ahmed was just a different type of player, though.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, and I'm not – I don't even know if he's playing anymore.
I don't think he's in baseball anymore.
Yeah. He was with the Dodgers on the trade, but I don't think
– signed him this year, but he's not their opening day shortstop.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Ahmed is just a type of player that is a free swinger.
Yeah.
And he's a hitter, meaning
– when he's locked in, he'll get you hit.
Yeah, he's just a hitter. He'll swing at bad pitches and hit them. He'll swing at good pitches and hit them. Mm-hmm. He'll swing at good pitches and miss.
Yep.
And he'll swing at bad pitches and miss. He's just the type of guy who's a swinger. He's a guy who's a hitter, meaning he gets up and gets his swings in.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to work a pitcher as much as you would want most players to do. That's just his style of ball. And he's had a quality career. And there's no question about it. And I'm not saying, he's limited on the defensive side. It's always going to hurt him. And, on the offensive side, he's very streaky. When he's on, one of the most dynamic hitters you want at the plate. When he's struggling, you don't want him at the plate. And that's just – he's just that type of player. But he's not even with the Guardians anymore. So, and that's, again – he was kind of a roadblock for these guys like Arias and Rocchio and others. So they had to make that move. And this is what they're trying to find out. I just want to watch baseball. I don't even care.
I don't have.
I mean, I want to see them win because winning is much more fun. But I just want to watch baseball and see how they perform.
They're going to win this many games. They're going to win this many games. I think it's going to be up and down, and a lot of stuff.
I want competitive games. Yeah. That's what I want to judge them on.
I want to see
how
guys,
competitive they are in the games. Can they compete all nine innings of a game?
Exactly. You want to see guys develop and take the next step. I think the big thing, like we've talked about the offense with Jimenez and Kwan and all of those guys, is, pitching-wise, is how can Bieber bounce back after last year? How can McKenzie bounce back? He basically missed all of last year. Can Bybee and Williams elevate their games even higher? Which, if they do, that takes your rotation higher. Emmanuel Clase, can you become the dominant closer that you have the potential to be? Because it's all there.
The potential's there, yeah. Can he put it all together like he did 2 years ago?
And I get people's rationale, but the more and more that I watch it and I watch other teams and I listen, especially to you, is I need my closer in the ninth inning when the game's on and I need a strikeout, I need you to get it.
Yeah. I mean,
and he can't, consistently.
We're going to find out where he stands this year. If last year was just a down year, or was it a scenario
it wasn't
where
a terrible year.
No,
it was
a down year.
Year.
What I'm saying is a projection down, meaning you could peak and then each year get progressively less productive as the previous year, and then be a very average pitcher within 3 years or even less. That's not uncommon, especially for relievers. Relievers also are very yo-yo like, meaning
they could be great
1 year, bad next year, great the next year.
It all goes in ebbs and flows. You never know.
It really depends on health and usage and belief and, having common thought processes of what you want to do. So we'll see where Clase is at. But, he's a closer. We'll see exactly how many games he gets a chance to close out and how he does in those games. Close games are going to matter. One-run games, two-run games. Mm-hmm. Can he hold leads? That's what I'm going to look at him at.
And we need somebody to help take some of the appearances and innings away from him.
If you want to grade him this year, grade him on this one thing. The first batter.
Yes.
grade him on the first batter? Does he walk him? Does he strike him out? Does he get a ground ball? Does he go deep into a count? There's a lot of different things to look at. And does he, and when I go deep in a count, does he go 3-2 like four different times to the batter before giving in?
Which he did often last year.
Or does he go 3-0 and give up the fourth ball
when
right
he's
away?
On, it's a weak ground ball to second.
Again, I know what you're saying, and I'm not disagreeing with any of that. I'm saying you want to grade him this year. Grade him on the first batter. See if he's throwing strikes. See if he's then able to induce the out, either the strikeout or the out. That's what you want to grade him on. And then see how he reacts to the next batter, whatever happens. And then you'll have an idea how successful he can be. But that first batter as a reliever, as a closer, is huge. If you can do those two things, throw strikes and induce outs, either through the strikeout or through a ground ball or a flyout. At times it was flyout, which is fine. But what you're worried about is how hard they hit the ball against you.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, those are the things I'm looking at. I'm not really worried about him having a 1.5 strikeouts per inning type thing. And that, I mean, great. Fantastic if it happens. It's probably a good sign. But it's not what I'm grading him on. I'm going to grade him on the first batter. Can he come in and throw strikes? And B, how does he, and the second thing I'm going to grade him on is when someone's on base, either inherited,
how do you hold the
or
run game? Yep.
He puts them on, how many of those runners score? That's going to be really, I mean, that's how you grade any pitcher out of a bullpen. But when it comes to Class A, that's the way I'm going to look. I'm going to look to see how he handles those situations and how successful or not successful he'll be in those scenarios. So, again, we'll wait. And, you know, time will tell. I'm not, I don't think, you know, 4 or 5 out innings or games or frame him is necessary.
No. Maybe occasionally, but not every.
Yeah, I hope it doesn't become.
Maybe once every couple months.
Yeah, maybe once a month.
Yeah.
I can see that scenario, but then you're probably going to lose them for a day.
Yep.
And you won't pitch them back-to-back on those days, most likely, I'm guessing. And as a bullpen and collective, with that in mind, who's going to step up to pitch the ninth innings when he's not available?
Barlow has that experience in Kansas City. He struggled last year in San Diego. Besides that, you don't have anybody else experience.
Barlow's probably the guy when he's not on the, you know, on the mound in the ninth inning. And you're going to have to close out games that you're up by 3 runs or more.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot of dynamics.
There's going to be a lot of moving pieces to the
It's going to be fun to watch.
And also a starting rotation, too.
Yeah, I'm more interested in seeing some of the young players come up in the next year.
I am, too.
I really want to see Manzardo. I want to see Lanter get a chance. I want to see others.
Yep.
We'll see. I mean, I could say they're going to win 85 games, and okay, great, if they do, fantastic. Yeah. Or I could say they're going to win 75 games. Oh, well, you know, it's disappointing.
Yeah.
I just want to watch them play good quality baseball this year. There were times in the last year where they just didn't.
They were bored.
They didn't have the ability to compete.
No.
They didn't have the ability to compete, and that's what I'm looking for this year. Can you compete?
Can you have competitive at-bat? That's a big thing for this team is, you know, can you string together innings?
The toughest thing to do is win 3-2 games every night.
It's really difficult. You've got to have, you know, 7-1, 5-0 sprinkled. I'm not saying score 7-8 runs a game.
Well, even you got to win the 7-6 games is what I'm trying to say. And they didn't have that many games, but they were competitive in the 7-6 games.
Mm-hmm. No, if they were giving up 7 runs, they were losing 7-0, 7-1.
Yeah. And that's my point. You have to find a way to score runs this year, period. You know, obviously the more runs you score, the better you have an opportunity to win a game with quality pitching, meaning you have a little play in a game. I'm not sure this team's designed to score 6 runs a game. I wish it was, but it's not. And, Is it designed to score 4 runs a game? That would be nice. I'd take 4 runs a game.
We need to.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if it'll happen. We'll see. I mean, we'll just it's a brand-new year, brand-new team. Obviously, you know, you have 2 cornerstone players to build around in Ramirez and Josh Naylor in your lineup every day. You can count on those guys being in your lineup every day. Bo Naylor should probably catch about 100 games this year or be involved in 100 games.
He should
either
catch or DH 105 games.
Yeah,
yes.
I was going to say in 100-120 range, depending on how they use them. Let's just say 100 games behind the plate. That would, you know, start 100 games.
Yeah.
That'd be wonderful. That would mean the other 2 catchers only had to deal with 60 games a year as a starter. And that would be good. And I like I said, I'm concerned about the makeup of the team because it has a lot of similar players. Other than the 2 we just mentioned in Ramirez and Naylor. And then you have Bo Naylor behind the plate, which is a different kind of player because he's a catcher. But you
they don't have a lot of thumb.
Yeah, they just – you need Jimenez to make a big difference this year.
It's
you need that extra bat.
3 hits to score a run when you would love to have – 3 hits give you 3 runs or 3 hits give you 4, you know.
Yeah, what you would love to see is a 3-run homer.
Yeah.
And they're going to be probably
a
few times.
Yep.
Anytime you can get multiple runs with 1 swing of the bat, that's a wonderful thing.
Oh.
And we'll see if this team can do that. I know they tinkered with Kwan a little bit to try to get the ball a little more lift and a little bit more power. We'll see. I mean, I just don't expect that out of him.
I don't either.
If he doubles his number from 5 to 10, that's fantastic.
Great.
That's fantastic. But I don't want to screw up a good player.
No, you don't want to give him too much.
I'd rather screw up with a Brennan than a Kwan.
Yes.
Absolutely. You know, that's the way I feel.
Absolutely.
You know, and I know I'm not wishing Brennan to get messed up, but that's just how I grade him.
No, I completely agree with you. You don't want to tinker too much. You want to adjust and add some things, but you don't want to take away from what makes him successful.
So opening day is Thursday night.
Thursday night, 10-10.
And then on the 8th. Is the
home
opener. The same day of the eclipse.
Yeah. It's going to be completely nutty up there.
Yeah. You're going to have your glasses?
I don't think so. I'll just go up there and get ready for the game. I don't. I am leaving at 10 a.m. that morning for a 5:10 game. Never thought I'd see that. Never thought I'd do that. But you got to.
It's going to be unique. I mean, we have a very unique scenario coming up.
Hopefully the 10-day forecast does not hold true because it's cloudy and rainy right now.
Wow.
So that, but
that's usually what happens.
Ohio, so. But if you get
Northeast Ohio
and rain in April, I'm taking it to the bank.
I can guarantee you 2 things in Northeast Ohio. It is going to rain and it's going to be cloudy.
Yep.
Okay. It never fails, especially if there is an astronomical event going on.
It's always going to be cloudy.
It's always going to be cloudy.
Yep.
If you had a meteor shower, you're not going to see it. It's going to be cloudy. If you have a lunar eclipse, it's going to be cloudy. If you're going to have a solar eclipse, it's going to be cloudy.
Yep.
So let's hope that the one day this year, Northeast Ohio gets a little blessed with the great.
It's going to be 50 degrees and sunny. And
I would love to be like today. We got up to about 65.
Would be gorgeous.
You know, it'd be wonderful.
You could rock the shorts and a hoodie and call it a day.
Hey, for that whole 30 seconds of totality, let's hope that everybody gets to enjoy it and, you know, have a memorable moment and a great baseball game. And starting the season in Oakland, then going to Seattle, correct?
Yeah,
for 4.
Yeah, you got 4 in Oakland, then 3 in Seattle, then 3 in Minnesota.
3 in Minnesota. So we got, you know, a combination of 2 out west and a divisional rival.
Yeah, and then you come home and play the White Sox for the opener. So, and then you walk with the Yankees. So it's not going to be easy.
Oh, it never is. Never is. I mean, in the end, I always say this, and I say it kind of being sarcastic. You're playing a major league schedule. You're never playing non-major league team, so you're always
really
gonna be
glad
challenged.
Our end of April schedule is a lot easier with the Braves and the Astros. You know, we get to lighten up there. You know,
yeah, you know. That's why I've always, in the last 15, 20 years, never really got to that far ahead in the schedule anymore. I just kind of look at it like, are they home or away?
Yeah.
Okay, they're going to be away for the next 7 games? Okay, great. Mm-hmm. Or they're going to be home for the next 7 games? Fantastic. You know, and because in the end, the competition is the competition. Yeah. And like I said, we're not going to be facing Toledo anytime soon.
No, we're not going to be facing Toledo or Rochester.
Or the Mahoney Valley Scrappers.
No, we're not facing Scrappers or Lake County Captains. Yeah. No.
We don't, this isn't soccer where, you play all these clubs up and down.
No, you're not going to be playing a 16 seed and then a 12 seed or something.
Yeah, yeah.
You'll be playing big boys from the start. So
It's
just nice to have baseball back, and like you said, a lot of young faces, see what they can do. A lot of guys looking to bounce back after last year, and they said all the right things. Now it's time to do the right things. So
the NCAAs are about, and we're in the Sweet 16. What's your thoughts so far?
Everybody's playing for second place right now. There's not a team in this country that can be within 10 points of UConn.
Yeah.
I mean, they are light years above everybody else. And when they have a bad game, and they had a bad half yesterday, and I say bad for UConn standards, they still win by 17. They are so good. They've been the best team in the country all year long. 7-footer Dahman clinging inside, Tristan Newton on the outside. They're just really good. They've won their last 8 tournament games by 13-plus points or more. First time anybody's done that since 2000-2001. I think if there's a team out there right now, because I thought going in, Houston could give them the best game, but Houston's banged up right now. I think the team that can give them the best game is probably Purdue, because Purdue's got E that can combat clinging down low. Creighton has beaten them this year, but that's Creighton getting to the national championship and beating Tennessee and then beating.
I know what you're saying.
It's just really difficult. Yeah.
Well, looking at my brackets, I filled out 3 this year. I usually do about 3. Mm-hmm. I do one main one. And I had UConn winning the whole thing. So that's not a surprise, as you just talked about. I'm currently ranked 6,900,000.
What are you ranked?
6.9 million.
With how many points?
I got 74% right and 440 points. I have a max availability of 1640 on ESPN.
You have how many points?
I have 440 right now.
440. And you're in the 75th percentile?
Yeah, 74% is what it says.
Okay.
Not too bad.
Okay. Not bad.
And then you obviously pick different for your next two. Yeah. I mean, why pick the same thing over again, right?
That's boring.
So I took Houston.
Smart.
I got 67% right.
Okay.
Ironically, I could do better with this, my second
pick. More possible points, yeah.
I got 440 total points, 430 right now, but I could do 670 if I max out, which is 30% or 30 points more than my number one bracket. And then I do my usually pick. And this is where I usually have Ohio State winning the whole thing.
Okay.
Since Ohio State was not involved.
Mm-hmm.
I decided to go with a Big Ten school.
Okay.
Took Purdue. And I got 48% in this bracket. And I got 400 points. And again, shockingly, I can actually max out with my highest number
of
points at 680 with this one.
Okay.
I don't think it's going to happen. But,
I don't want to jinx anything now. I probably am going to. I lost one game in the second round.
Oh, wow.
I know I as soon as I say this, I'm going to jinx it starting Thursday night. I'm ranked 12,000.
Oh, that ain't bad.
99.9%.
Oh, you're doing real well.
So a max of 18-20. But I know as soon as I say this, it's going to go.
Yeah.
You know, that's
well,
how it usually
if
goes.
You... He, I'll tell you what, if you did that well in round two and you're set up with 15 or 16 teams going into the Sweet 16, mm-hmm. you're in good shape. Meaning, chances are really well that it may fall your way where you will get all four, final four,
mm-hmm.
and then have a chance to win, you know, a bracket type thing. If it was, you know, if you were in a pool.
My goal every year is to just finish 90% or better.
Yeah.
And I think last year was 97. I think last year was my best year, 97.
I started at 98% in the first day. And then. And not good ever since.
My one upset pick, I had Baylor. Or I had Baylor winning two games. And they got beat last night.
You know, I had Oakland and I changed my pick.
I tell you what.
I didn't want to take Oakland because I was so disappointed in Youngstown State. Yeah. Which we're going to talk to you about here in a second. Go ahead.
Oakland is the prototypical team. Now, it's easier to say this now than 2 months ago.
Right.
But when you look back on it, Oakland is the prototypical team you do not want to see in round one if you're yeah. Kentucky. Because, A, they've had a coach here for 40 years.
Right.
B, they're experienced. They got 4th, 5th, 6th-year guys. They are freakishly athletic, and they can shoot to three.
Yeah.
And their backup point guard's a Michigan State transfer. So,
no, that's exactly what it is.
It makes me feel a little bit better after Golke went for 32 against Kentucky. Him and Lampman did that against YSU. So it makes me feel a little bit better. It wasn't just us, but.
Well, they won the Horizon League for a reason. They were the best team that was prepared to yep. win this year, and they did win. They did win.
And it wouldn't have surprised me if they would have beat NC State.
No, and they came darn close.
That was a great game.
Yeah, and, you know, they made a good showing for the Horizon League, which is good.
Absolutely.
And under the rules that today in basketball, this is a one-and-done league. You're not going to get two teams in. Unless you get so outrageous where
you have two teams a couple years ago.
Well, what I was going to say, you get two teams that are 28-1.
Yeah.
Or 28-2 mm-hmm. type scenario mm-hmm. going into selection, mm-hmm. you know. And I just, the odds are not, that's not going to happen. You're going to get more competitive what you've seen this year on the Horizon League, where you have 4 or 5 teams who are very
absolutely
had a legitimate shot at winning the tournament,
mm-hmm.
and you know Oakland, you know, seized the day and did it, and that brings us to Youngstown State and disappointment once again of not advancing, and that Jared Calhoun he's a weird scenario here for me to say this,
yeah.
He is the most successful basketball coach at YSU since Mike Rice.
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder if we've plateaued.
I think we have.
And if you're the university.
If you look at his style and look at his history in March, it's not very good.
No, it's not.
At Fairmont State, granted they got the national championship, they got waxed.
Yeah.
They get here, and I think you're right, Tim. Here and then here, it was like this, and I think we're starting to hit that plateau now. Where,
well, yeah, and I think the hardest thing here is what you just talked about, Oakland,
mm-hmm.
as a veteran team, meaning that team stayed together.
Yep,
he recruited that team.
Exactly.
He added pieces to it through the
portal mm-hmm. exactly.
and transfers. While Youngstown,
those guys had multiple years.
Youngstown, the last 3 years have been very heavily involved
in the portal,
excuse me, and have been successful getting players here to compete and win with.
It's a reason why,
but you always have a huge turnover.
It's a reason why teams like Wright State and Northern Kentucky And even Cleveland State are consistently there at the end of the year.
Yeah.
Because they get guys for 3-4 years, develop them. This is Wright State's worst team, and I use air quotes, worst team. It was a 3 or 4 seed.
Right.
And a lot of good guys. And Tim, the kid they got coming in next year, he's a stud.
Yeah.
I mean, saw him firsthand Saturday. He's incredible.
Yeah, well, that's how you recruit. That's how you build programs. You know, one of the discussions I had this week about Jerry Calhoun, and, of course, has been reported and confirmed that he interviewed this past week with Southern Illinois.
Some rumors about Duquesne, but I don't.
Well, here's the thing. Here you got to remember. You're going from the Horizon League to Missouri Valley Basketball League, which is a huge jump up. Okay, and in pay at Youngstown, he's making about $300,000 a year.
He's making
$280 something.
I don't think he's making that.
I think he's making close to three.
I think he's making less than Phillips.
I think he was making more than Phillips, actually. Yeah, I thought he was.
I thought the football coach made more.
Not
I
this
could be wrong.
Now the president makes the most now, but that's a different story. But yeah, I believe they were on equal par, at least
because
value of contract.
The women's basketball coach is getting 180, I think.
I did not see what she got.
I think 5 years for 180, I think.
Yeah, I did not see what she got. But for the most part, it's around $300,000. It might be give or take a few in that range.
Here,
but if you go to
$300,000, he just got.
Yeah. I thought his new contract paid him that.
Yep. You're exactly right.
Yeah.
Tim.
And if you go to what Southern Illinois paid their last coach, it was around $450,000 a year. So you can see the significant upgrade.
I believe we just signed Jarrett Calhoun to an extension.
Well.
If I'm reading this correctly.
Yeah, go ahead. Let's. Oh, it would make sense because he was negotiating with another school trying to get a job. So
this was either last year or this year. Through the 2027-28 season, he's making $300,000 base salary.
I think last year's extension.
Okay.
I think that's what it was.
All right, so last year. And I don't know his buyouts.
I don't know what his buyouts are, but yeah, I believe that's what he that was the extension he signed after last season. However,
he gets $25,000 for first place last year, $20,000 for second place this year.
I think he gets bonuses for wins in the tournament.
Yep.
And
winning
the tournament.
Year he got last year, he gets that. Postseason incentive, $15,000, he got that.
They probably could bring him up to $300,000 a year. His base salary might be around 280, 240, 260, who knows. But
APR scores and all this. So, yeah, he could probably be making upwards of $400,000 on this.
I think there's the potential for that. Yeah. I'm not sure he's there, but I think there's the potential for that, you know, with bonuses and that. I don't know if his base salary is 300 or with incentives is 300.
The base salary is 300,000.
Okay.
So he's probably making $400,000 with media and everything.
Right. And then you look, you look at, let's just use Southern Illinois as the stepping stone. If he did get that job,
I think
they may have hired someone. I'm just saying,
I'm just
using this as an example, Anthony. If you take that as an example, their base salary is $450,000.
Yeah.
So you're talking base salary is $150,000.
Yeah.
$150,000 difference is what I'm trying to get to. And it shows you, you know, what it means.
They have not hired a coach yet.
Yeah. There's different rumors going on. We'll see. I mean, I'm not saying he's going to get that job. I mean, if he gets it, great. I mean, it would be an interesting situation for the university to hire the next coach if that would happen. Excuse me. Because let's be honest, their track record's not good.
That's being very kind.
Yes.
It's very poor.
Their track record has not been great at all. I mean, you go all the way back to when Rice got fired. Eventually, basically, was replaced by Jimmy Clemens.
Mm-hmm.
And he was replacing the, I forget what his name was. He died of cancer after they hired him. It was a heartbreaking story, but can't remember his name.
Can't remember.
It doesn't matter. Jimmy Clemens, he was here for 2 years, and then he left to go to the NBA with mm-hmm. the Bulls. I guess John Stroia took over, and that was a disaster.
Mm-hmm.
Dan Peters came back in and brought some respectability back to the program, and then he left to go to Ohio State as mm-hmm. an assistant. Or he went to Cincinnati, I think. He went to Cincinnati.
Then Ohio State.
Then yeah. Ohio State.
Yeah.
Needless to say. Then you had
Robic.
John Robic.
Yep.
John Robic was mediocre. Let's be kind. Mm-hmm. Mediocre. He had a couple good years early with, and then when it came to his own players, he had trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had Jerry Slocum, who was very mediocre. Very mediocre. And then you had, you know, Calhoun, who has been consistently better most seasons.
Here's the situation you're in right now. You're in a similar situation in the football program with Eric Wolford, where you're not terrible. The recruiting's better. You're knocking on the door.
Right. That's what I'm saying. But have you plateaued?
Wolford plateaued, and...
And football being the economic mm-hmm. engine of the university sports program,
mm-hmm.
that matters. And that's what happened with a lot of the changes in basketball, is when basketball became too expensive to... It was not even breaking even.
Mm-hmm.
Even, you know, when they could only draw 400 or 500 people,
mm-hmm.
that was a problem. That's when they had to make changes. I mean, when
when
Stroia was here and it really got ugly, where they could the women were outdrawing the men back in the late '80s, mm-hmm. early '90s. That's a problem.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's where Youngstown was at one point. And then Dan Peters,
mm-hmm.
we brought some respectability back to the program. He was a roller coaster, but again, it was what
it's going to be very interesting to see.
Here's the thing that you know Mike brought up to me, and it's a legitimate point. If Calhoun leaves,
mm-hmm.
Dines probably follows him.
Oh yeah, I think you'll have
right. But my point is, you lose. Not only have you lost players who like Burns. Mm-hmm. And others who gone back into the portal this year. You're going to lose players that you're trying to build a program
Lovelace,
under.
Yes. Dines.
Lovelace. Didn't he go into the portal?
I don't know yet.
I think he did. Yeah, he did.
Did he?
Yeah. And Burns did. And there was another player that did, too. I think, but he didn't play much.
Farmer.
Well, it wasn't Farmer.
Or Bates.
Freeland.
Freeland.
He didn't play much, so. But needless to say, that's to me what the portal's for, is for a player like that to see if he can find a program.
I honestly don't fault DJ Burns. If he can go get a NASBO hand in that Clemson kind of year and make money, why not?
Well, you know, that's where all players are at. Let's be honest. All players, you know, with the name and recognition type deals, you might as well. The NIL, you might as well take full advantage of it if you can. And all players at all levels do it.
We need a coach that can consistently recruit high school talent. I'm not saying get completely away from the transfer portal.
No.
But you have to
build
a program such as Youngstown State.
Yes.
Through high school recruiting.
Yes.
And don't tell me there's not talent here because I saw it in Dayton on Saturday. There's talent here. There's one going to Rice State. He scored 34. He set the state record.
There's talent throughout the state. There's talent in Western Pennsylvania.
Yes, exactly.
There's talent.
You can supplement.
Well, there's talent in the region. Yes. Yes. But you have to be, you know, you have to sell your program.
Yeah.
You have to get into the schools.
It might be easier now.
It's difficult for a school as Youngstown's size.
Mm-hmm.
You almost need a second head coach one that's absolutely the one who's making the contacts mm-hmm. and getting into the schools and making relationships with the different high schools mm-hmm. all around the region. You know, let's do the state of Youngstown.
Yep.
Jim Trussler
yep.
used to say, let's say it's 250-mile radius yep. of Youngstown, which is a big radius. You know, obviously, you can go all the way to Philadelphia with something mm-hmm. like that, okay? And there's so much talent in Philadelphia and in Pittsburgh and
Indiana,
and Cleveland.
Let's not forget Indiana either.
Well, that's my whole point. Yeah. I was just going to get there.
Yeah.
You know, you got – there's a lot of talent. But the problem is you have to make relationships to get into these schools. Mm-hmm. And then you have to make relationship with these coaches. So when you come knocking on a door talking about player A or player B, mm-hmm. and you want to bring them in to be a successful recruit, you have ways to doing that. And that's the hardest part, in my opinion. Youngstown State Athletic, the head coach – has so much responsibility that without a great lieutenant to help
exactly.
get all that
exactly.
done, it's difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And that is going all the way back. I remember talking to Dan Peters years ago, and he said, you know, the recruiting is the hardest part of this job. It's mm-hmm. not the X and O's. It's not the actual game situation. Is just a matter of trying to get, you know, being able to get in front of players
and hopefully
and talk to them and, you know, and create a need for, you know, a desire for them to come play for this university and that. And that goes across the board in all sports. That's the most difficult thing to do. Obviously, in football, you have a lot more assistant coaches mm-hmm. to go out on the trails to recruit. In basketball, you have three. You know, and one's usually a very young, inexperienced yep. guy. That's why you get to the next level, a higher mid-major like Southern Illinois, mm-hmm. who playing in the Missouri Valley.
Yeah.
You're not only just improving your level of income, but you're improving the level of income of all your assistants. And then you are able to maybe hire an extra assistant to help be a recruiting coordinator and stuff like that. It really, truly shows you how difficult it is. I'm not making an excuse. I'm just saying it's difficult. Where you're 100% right. The only way you build a program is through recruiting, and you have to retain these recruits today. So you're never yeah. not recruiting them.
But so, like Michael said, you know, like you said, the guys that entered the portal that have multiple years of eligibility, were they impact players? Not really. I mean, Breland and Lovelace didn't really do much. Lovelace
right.
had
but
a couple
depth.
Good games,
there's
but
depth.
They're depth.
You know, and there's always the potential to improve.
Yeah.
I know what you're saying.
Yes.
I'm not disagreeing with what you're saying, but you hate to see that type of turnover every year. You
oh,
lose
yeah.
three or four players,
yep.
and then you have graduation. And here you are right now needing 7, 8, maybe 9 players for next year's team.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever you may bring in as freshmen, or, you know, and then you have to bring in through
part
the portal.
Part of me believes the reason why, look, I believe he wants to leave this program better than he found it, and he has.
Oh, sure, certainly.
I think the renovations to Beagley will help. But let's not fool ourselves either that the reason why, partially, he is hitting the transfer portal so hard with fourth-year students, graduate students, is because he's trying to win now.
Absolutely.
Get that tournament and move up.
Oh, there's no question.
I mean, he's got
there's
to look
no
out for
question,
himself, too.
But this is a stepping stone job.
Absolutely.
I mean, we were so blessed and spoiled by Jim Tressel. Meaning, here was a guy who was 34 mm-hmm. years old when he took the
yep.
job, and He looked elsewhere at times, mm-hmm. and he signed new contracts here. He was able to leverage it and get good contracts and stay here. And we were blessed with, 11 or 12 years of Jim Tressel in Youngstown?
16.
Yeah. I mean, it was a wonderful ride. Yeah, that doesn't happen every day.
No, that doesn't happen anymore.
Okay, most scenarios is like Pelini.
Yeah.
Meaning you're going to have a guy for about 4 or 5 years max, mm-hmm. and they're going to move on.
Quickly, yep.
To another better paying opportunity and job, whatever it may mm-hmm. be. Wolford was the same thing. This was his stepping stone. Mm-hmm. It didn't work out for him, but, he's gone back into coaching.
He's done pretty well in Alabama. Or
well, that's
he's
my
now,
point
yeah.
is he's landed on his feet. He's mm-hmm. done well. As for Phillips, he could go down the same path of all the previous coaches in the last 20 years, meaning be here for about a 5-year stint and then be let go.
Hey, Dougie's got him on a roll.
But, we'll just wait and see. I hate saying it like that.
We won't be drop kicking Dougie on 680 this year.
I hope. I hope not. it wasn't the prettiest year ever last
year.
No,
they made the playoffs. That's all that matters.
I was just going to say, but in the end, they have something to show.
And they won a game.
Yeah, and they have something to show.
Yep. They can hang that banner in the locker room.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see. I was going to say, players are out there. You got to find a way to get mm-hmm. them here. And, when you lose players, it's interesting because I seen a player from Western PA this past week sign with Duquesne football.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, mm-hmm. I know who he is. And he's a good ball player. And I'm like, mm-hmm. And I'm thinking to myself, were you in the room with him or not?
Mm-hmm.
And who knows? I can't say yes or no. But when I see good talent go to regional schools the same size or you're competing mm-hmm. against, and Duquesne you played in the playoffs and beat, by the way. So maybe he is not as good as the players that you need here. It's an interesting thing.
Yeah.
And you're not going to win them all. You're not going to win them every player.
No, you're going to win some. You're going to lose. That's recruiting.
And it's just the way life goes. So, Doug Phillips may be here 7 years, might be here 5 years, might be here one more year. Who knows? We don't. I think his desire is to be here for a long time.
Yeah.
But this is the type of job that he probably
never thought he'd get.
Yeah. Or this is where he wanted to
make it out.
This is where he wanted to begin mm-hmm. the end of his career.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a good way to put it. We'll see. I think this is a big year for his credibility going
Absolutely.
Forward. Can you build on a year that you made the playoffs? Or do you fall backwards? And we'll have, wait and see. And that's just kind of like Calhoun. Calhoun, the last 2 years, won the Horizon League regular yep. season, a minor championship, is the way I call it.
Mm-hmm.
And then this past year, very competitive in a top four
place,
finishing.
Yeah.
And
then you fell out your place,
But you failed in the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
When you have to win 3 games in a row, you failed. They couldn't win one. And that's the problem. And, if you're not in the top four, you have to win 4 games in a row. And the Horizon League tournament is unlike other tournaments in this country where you have to win them back to back to back.
Yeah.
And Horizon League, you get 3-4 days off.
Which is really weird.
Yeah. And it's obviously because of television.
I wonder also real quick if the Horizon League, this is the first year since 2018, I think, the one seed has won the conference tournament.
Well, that's actually a good thing.
They rearranged the bracket in 2014.
Yes.
To get the one seed closer to the.
Right.
I almost wonder if they may not adapt what the West Coast Conference does and give the 1 and 2 seeds by as always semifinals. I don't want them to do that.
I can see that. I understand what you're saying.
It would not shock me.
Well, and again, you want.
You want your best teams out there.
Well, yeah. Here's the thing. How do conferences make money? They make money through television revenue.
Mm-hmm.
The revenue for a tournament is probably the biggest generator they have.
Yeah.
All right. So as a conference, not saying as a university, you want this university here. Mm-hmm. As a conference, you want your two best teams to be deep exactly. in the tournament.
Exactly.
To give you at least to the semifinals, mm-hmm. if not the finals, against each other and have a good showing on ESPN yep. or ESPN mm-hmm. Plus, yep. whatever, whatever it may yep. be, and generate the ratings and the opportunity to get a bigger contract going forward. So when conferences try to manipulate the odds of getting teams to mm-hmm. deeper in their tournament, there's a reason for it. It's because of the money involved.
They want the money.
Well, and I understand that. Mm-hmm. And that's just smart business. It does take away the competitiveness of a tournament.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what makes tournaments unique, because, you know, the old adage is, you know, win and move on, or survive and move on mm-hmm. to the next round matters. Where Youngstown's at is they have to find a way to take that next step
mm-hmm.
and get deep into the Horizon League tournament, which they've never done.
You've
got
to take the next step to get to the conference championship game.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, by yep. getting deep into a tournament. You can't lose in the first round. You can't lose in the second round. You have to... you know, you have to get deep. You have to win a couple games. You have to find a way, especially when you're home.
Yeah.
When you've had home games the last 2 years and you're losing those games, that's just – that's unacceptable.
Yeah, and it's
– it really is.
It's a large part on Calhoun, too.
Yeah, and then I'll be honest, it was a frustrating thing to deal with again as yeah. a fan. And yeah. And it's nothing – I honestly didn't think this team was good enough to make a deep run.
But I thought they had the potential. Blown out from court.
I thought they had the potential to win a few games,
mm-hmm.
and that just didn't happen. And to lose at their home court, as
they
you just mentioned,
blown out like they did.
Yeah, it'd be
because Cleveland State didn't have their best player.
Well, yeah, that's and more than that is just they weren't competitive in the game. I don't want no. blowout's probably the wrong word, but. Unable to make
any
adjustments.
On
yeah,
State, no.
and that's that to me is on the coaching staff that
Absolutely.
Game. And that's like I said, Youngstown kind of in that dynamic situation where Jared Calhoun is the most successful coach you've had in the last 40 years.
Mm-hmm. But now you start to worry, have you hit your plateau?
And now that I'm concerned, has he plateaued?
And, but another thing is.
And here's the thing, he has to be concerned about this too. Because he doesn't want a reputation
that he starts to develop
that he can't win in March, tournament yeah. games mm-hmm. in March. Exactly. And then when he goes to interviews
for bigger jobs,
right? There, you know, certain scenarios are going to be brought up. I mean, obviously, there's a lot more to it than just wins and losses mm-hmm. and all that. However, your performances matter. Jim Tressel never gets the job in Columbus without winning the national
exactly.
titles that he did
exactly.
here.
Exactly.
And that's just the way it works. Ryan Days are unique,
mm-hmm.
meaning
yes.
that you're on the staff and you inherit the team. What's
yes.
going on in Michigan, same
yes.
scenario,
mm-hmm.
unique. It does happen. Overall success of these teams, we'll wait and see. But, you know. I just found out earlier today that the very first national covered spring game on television
yes, Ohio State.
Will be Ohio State
yeah.
this year.
On Fox.
On Fox. On over the network.
Yeah.
Not Fox One Sports
Fox.
On cable, but Fox over the air.
Yeah, that'd be pretty cool. And that's really impressive.
That's
and
kind of weird.
It's neat,
not
though.
Shocking, but
no.
it just shows you how big football is. And how much it's grown in the last 30
absolutely.
Years. And it is king. Where
and you'll get a million viewers on that.
Oh, yeah. And this is, well they'll be phenomenal. They'll get great ratings.
And, you'll have Gus and Joel for April football. And,
yeah.
you know,
well,
real
we're not
quick
far
story.
Away from spring
no.
football here
Why
for Youngstown.
Why you, yeah. a spring game is April 13th at 11 a.m. So excited to see, you know, the quarterback battle.
Yeah.
Receivers. Replacing Bryce Oliver and new defensive coordinator. But yeah. you get Tyshawn King back. He's granted an extra eligibility by the NCAA, so that's huge.
No, that's huge. Exactly.
You know, real quick here to finish up, speaking of YSU in football, I went to the boys basketball state semifinals this weekend. A lot of fun. If you get a chance to
absolutely.
Go.
Gotta go. Gotta go.
We're walking with my future father-in-law, and it was a bunch of his buddies that he's really good with to the semifinals. And he was telling me all about them, how they met and all this, you know, little high school buddies that, you know, coming from across the country. And I walk in, and I'm wearing my YSU app because Earlson's playing, so I want to support Youngstown and all that. And walk in, and what I was failed to be told was two other gentlemen, nice guys, two of the nicest guys in the world you ever meet. But both of them played in the early 90s for Marshall. And I'm wearing that damn thing, and I'm like, boy, 91 was fun, wasn't it?
91, like, 93, and 94 were some of the best years I've ever seen in football.
Man, and I might have turned
You might have dug it in a little deep.
And I said, I think Tamron Smith just scored again. And I said, I didn't want to bring up 92. You know, that was painful.
Yeah.
But 91 and 93 were a lot of fun.
But you know what you always say about 92 is, you know, Marshall had a 28-0 lead in that game.
Yeah. Yeah. And you blew it. You know, but hey, I'll take you know, 93 was so bad, we put our backups in the first quarter. You know? So, hey, I'll take 91 and 93. And yeah, that was
it was a golden time in football.
Oh, I could puff my chest out a little bit. And,
I don't blame you.
No.
I don't blame you one bit. Never you might as well enjoy the opportunity when it gets there.
Exactly.
So, with that in mind, Anthony, I think we covered it all here.
Yeah.
Another 90 minutes gone by here.
Excited for Thursday night. The Sweet 16 kicks off or tips off, but you got baseball starting. So it's going to be a really fun night Thursday night. It's going to be a late night, but it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it should be a lot of fun. A lot of great basketball. I've seen a lot of great basketball over in Pennsylvania this year. Real quick, congratulations on an amazing season for the Franklin Knights, a school I used to cover many years ago over in Viango County. They got to the state finals. They fell by 4 points in the finals, 60-56, but an amazing run by Jason Coomer and his his Knights. And what an amazing run for them. So I got to see them play one game this year. We got to cover Neshanic and Franklin in the first round of the state playoffs, and it was fun to see. It was fun to get back to Franklin, and real quick, man, it was totally different. They redid the entire gymnasium, and I'm like, this is not the same place I used to be at. I see that and that. That's it. Everything else is new. And it was the funniest thing is I went and talked to Jason. I knocked on the door. I said, hey, you remember me? He goes, yeah, how you doing? And all that. We talked for a few minutes, and I did an interview. I said, so, Jason, I got to ask you a couple questions. You know, I says, I haven't, you know, obviously I haven't been here since, you know, last time I talked to you. And I go, I seen a 4-year gap where you weren't here. I said, were you somewhere else? He goes, no, I got ran out of town. Yeah, I'm paraphrasing. Yeah, and I went, no kidding. I says, I just shook my head because he's a really good basketball coach. Mm-hmm. And he goes, I had some problems and they got rid of me. And I was like, no kidding. He goes, and then they came back and four years later, they came and asked me to come back and I did. And I says, well, that's good. I says, the thing is, he's a graduate of that high school, so it's even better. So I laughed, and I says, well, hopefully that will never happen again. And I says, maybe we can make these reunions a little quicker. I found out about that. I go, so when did they do the gymnasium? So about 4 years ago, I think it was.
4 years ago.
I says, no kidding. So you and I both walked into new places. He laughed. But it was great to see him, and his basketball team is really talented. Really talented. A lot of fun to watch, and a lot of great basketball players over in Western PA, and Jared Calhoun should know that. And I would definitely invest time in finding some of those players over in the Whipple area in that. And it'd be worth their time, my estimation. But, all right, enough of this, me dragging on about my reunions on the airwaves. But so baseball season begins on Thursday mm-hmm. night. Yes, it is. Take a nice deep breath. Bring in fresh. It's a fresh new season. 162 games scheduled coming your way. A lot of pining by us. A lot of frustration. Mm-hmm. A lot of celebration on the way. And baseball season's back. And as I always like to say, Anthony, tell your family, friends, and enemies.
That's right.
About Radio MVP. We'll talk to you soon. Bye.